Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos Lamed Zayin. We begin this morning with the Mishnah. It's the second Mishnah of the Perek, although you might have forgotten because we've been spending a good amount of time since the first Mishnah. First Mishnah started on Chav Tes, and from Chav Tes to yesterday's daf, to Lamed Vav, that's over a week in Daf Yomi. That's a lot of Gemara dedicated to one topic, but for a good reason, meaning there are so many fundamental issues that come up from that first Mishnah here in the Perek. So onus and mafata, a man either rapes or seduces a woman, so he's going to have to pay knas in addition to a number of other penalties that are imposed upon the individual. And so our discussion has been centered around whether or not a person who is violating another avera while also being obligated money, whether the two can coexist. Can two penalties be levied on a person for one singular act? So this is a major discussion, and we just concluded yesterday the Gemara's lengthy treatment of this particular topic. But we're not done, meaning the Kimle B'Dirabimine, this idea, this concept is going to continue. In fact, we're going to be seeing it right now in our Mishnah as well. But this Mishnah is going to be the contrast, meaning the generally speaking, these are how Mishnayos operate. Mishnayos want to show contrast between one scenario and another scenario. In one scenario, you would be paying Kenas. In another scenario, you won't be paying Kenas. And that's, of course, our Mishnah. And we begin. Mishnah Lamed Vav Amid Beis, right in the middle of the Amud, Ve'elu She'ein Lahem Kenas. So these are going to be a list of women. When a man's ma'ani, sir, he's not going to be paying Kenas. Abal Yorz Ve'al Shuvah Ve'al Shivcha She'niftu V'shin Iskair V'shin Ishtachru Yiseros Al Beno Shal Shanim Yom Echad. So any of these women who either they converted or they were held captive or they were Shivcha Kenanis, and each one of them left their status, meaning to become a full-fledged Jew. Obviously, each one has a unique process in terms of how to become a full-fledged Jew. As far as the Geirus is concerned, that's conversion. As far as Shichur is concerned, so that's emancipation. While she was a Shivcha Kananis, she was not a Jew, but she wasn't a non-Jew. In other words, she was a Shivcha Kananis, for lack of a better term. Let's just call it what she is. And but when she becomes free, she becomes a full-fledged Jew. And as far as the Shvuya is concerned, the Shvuya always was a Jew, but she was held in captivity. And as we've learned time and again, once being held in captivity, she's at the whim of her captor. And so therefore, in those circumstances, in all these circumstances, the assumption is that any of these women did in fact have relations with men who would obviously remove her besulim because the relations occurred after 3 years of age. So that besulim is not going to return. And so therefore, all these women do not have besulim. So this is all but a technical point, as we've discussed already numerous times since the beginning of this perek, and that is that the kenas penalty that's imposed, the punitive fine that's imposed, is for the rupturing of the besulim, since these women are presumed not to have besulim, so therefore there's not going to be a kenas. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Shvuyi Shnifte Sarei B'Kedusha Safa Pi Shigdola. And Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that when it comes to a Shvuya, so she has a cheskas of being a besula, right? Rabbi Yehuda takes a differing point than that of our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda's cholek on our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda's of the position that a Shvuya is assumed to be, in fact, pristine. More Rav Yehuda's position is going to be discussed in the Gemara. Haba al bita v'abas bita v'abas b'no abas isha abas b'no abas bita ein lehem knas. A man has relations with one of these arayas, meaning as opposed to the first Mishnah, where we also mentioned the number of arayas, but we talked about arayas that are only Kares Arayas, only subject to the Kares penalty, but not to Mises Bidei Adam. Our Mishnah over here goes over those Arayas that are subject to Mises Bidei Adam. Man has relations with either his daughter or a number of other women that we just went through. I'm not going to go through each one of them in the Mishnah. Since they come with it, Mises Bidei Adam, it's a capital crime. So therefore, what cannot coexist is Mises Bidei Adam and Mammon. And in fact, this is a Mishnah, meaning this Mishnah is the primary source that teaches us halacha kimle b'derabimine. When a person violates an act that comes with it capital punishment, so what cannot come together with it is going to be monetary payment. In fact, it's a pasuk in the Torah. Im lo yason anoshenesh. So once again, let's revisit this pasuk one more time. We've covered this pasuk numerous times, but as long as we're doing the Mishnah, as long as we are right now in the principal area in the Torah that discusses Kimle B'Derabimine, so let's go back. It is a pasuk found in Parshas Mishpatim, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chav Beis V'chi Yenatzu Hashem. So what happens, this is that two men were fighting. V'nagfu Isha Hara. And a woman who was pregnant just gets right in the middle of the fight, and she gets hit. V'yatzu Yiladeha. And she miscarries as a result of the blow. V'lo Yason Anoshanesh. Now, if she does not die, and so the only thing that is happening over here is just a miscarriage. Now, obviously, I'm saying that for the purposes of relative basis, meaning obviously the miscarriage is a tragedy. But as far as halacha is concerned, it's not an act of murder. It is also, again, this gets to the abortion issue, but we're not going to be covering the abortion issue as that's not our topic. Our topic is just simply looking at what are the various punishments. Since this is not a case of murder, as the mother did not die, but the miscarriage occurred, which causes a financial liability. So that's Anosha Aneshka, Asher Yishitzalav Bal Haisha, V'nasam B'Flilim. You're going to go to court, that's Flilim. You're going to go to court, and the court's going to assess how much monetary damage one has to pay for those damages. That's if she doesn't die. However, the next pasuk goes on to describe, but if she does die, so then this is going to be a capital case, and you don't pay. This is a pasuk in the Torah that speaks to this idea of Kim Le'Bederabim Inates. Actually, very straightforward, very clear cut. And all the Gemara now is doing is just simply taking the idea, the concept, and simply giving another application. A man is ma'anis a woman, and in that act of ones, not only does he have the kanas liability, but he's also subject to mises bidei adam. So therefore, the mises bidei adam is going to overshadow, it's going to override the financial liability. There will therefore no longer be a financial liability. Okay, just as long as we're here, a couple more things just to either both review and just to highlight. Number one, remember that these Mishnayos, meaning this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah, is not going like Rav Nechunya ben Akana. Remember, we did this a week ago. But we did this a while back, where Rav Nechunya ben Akana says that Kimlei b'derabi mineh is not just going to be for Mises b'dei Adam, it also will be for Karis as well. Meaning if it's Karis coupled together with a financial liability, so the Karis is going to override the financial liability. That's the opinion of Rav Nechunya ben Akana. So our Mishnayos, both the previous Mishnah and this Mishnah, is clearly not going like Rav Nechunya ben Akana. The only time where we're going to say Kimlei is only when it is a corporal punishment that's issued by Beis Din. Beis Din is capped with two punishments, but if one punishment is Mina Shamayim, the other one is Bidei Adam, so those two can coexist. Fine, that's our Mishnayos, and it's not like the opinion of Rav Nechunya ben Akana. Another highlight, if I may, in terms of Kimlei b'derabim mineh, this is a much larger discussion, but let's at least just go over the basics, and that is that we say, as we are saying right now, that the financial liability is going to be overshadowed, it's going to be overridden by the fact that there's capital punishment. That's what we say time and again. So there are, basically we could say one of two ways. Either we could say that there's zero financial liability, meaning that the financial liability is totally off the books as the capital punishment is going to take center stage, and there simply is no room for the financial liability. That's one way to say it. But the other way to say it, and certainly, I don't know if all Rishonim are saying this, but certainly Tosos, I can point to a couple Tososim throughout Shas that clearly are of this position, and that is that and there's a Rashi also. Anyway, let's just simply say the Rishonim, right? But I don't know exhaustively if everyone's on board with this, but certainly enough are that this is definitely true, and that is that another way to say it is that the financial liability is just simply non-enforceable, meaning that there still is a financial liability. You are financially responsible for all the damages that you did. It's just simply non-enforceable. Beis Din only has the ability to enforce one of the two penalties, but not both penalties. And so therefore, even though the financial liability is not enforceable by Beis Din, but you're still obligated. Latzeis lidei shamayim, in order to satisfy your, let's call it a moral obligation. It's really poor choice of word. It's not a moral obligation. It's a Torah obligation. But, you know, in other words, it's an easy way for us to think about it. But to fulfill your moral obligation, so therefore you're going to have to pay. It's just that you can't be taken to Beis Din in order to enforce this financial obligation. That is another way to say it, and it seems like the majority of the Rishonim do, in fact, follow this position, that Kimlei b'derabim mineh doesn't knock out the financial liability, it just simply makes it unenforceable. Okay, with all that stated, let's run into the Gemara. Lamed vav amed beis, amar Rav Yochanan. Rav Yehuda v'Rabbi Dos, amar davar echad. So Rav Yochanan would like to string together two Tanaim, that of Rav Yehuda and that of Rabbi Dosa. Sorry. Rav Yehuda Adamar, and so Rav Yehuda, of course, of our Mishnah, let's remember, Rav Yehuda, our Mishnah says that when it comes to a shvuya is an echeskas tahara, meaning despite the fact that she was held captive by non-Jews, we assume that she's pristine. That's the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Again, we don't pass on like Rav Yehuda, but that's the opinion of Rav Yehuda. And meanwhile, what does Rav Dosa say? Rav Dosa, detanya shvuya ochalas b'truma, div Rav Dosa. A shvuya can come out. She was a bas kohen, eshes kohen. She can come out, she continues, and she can continue to eat truma. And had she been violated during her captivity, she would have been prohibited from eating truma. She would have the status of being a zona. She'd be disqualified from eating truma. But Rabbi Dosa says that we don't assume that she was violated. Amr Rabbi Dosa v'chi ma asala aravi alaz v'chi mimnei shemiach la bein dadeha pasam and a kahuna. And Rabbi Dosa says, look, what happened? She was fondled while she was being held captivity, but she wasn't violated. Okay, now, what Rabbi Dosa's position is based on, meaning the Chachamim clearly argue with Rabbi Dosa, and so they're having a machlokas and mitzias in terms of what happens, generally speaking, when a woman is held in captivity. A little bit unclear in terms of how to properly explain the machlokas between Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim, but what Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting, what he's trying to assert is that Rabbi Dosa and Rabbi Yehuda are basically on the same page with one another. Again, Rabbi Yehuda says that a woman held captivity is assumed to be in a cheskes tahara, and therefore she can come out according to Rabbi Yehuda. And if, in fact, it was subsequently violated, we assume that she still has her pesulim, and the ma'anis is going to have to pay her knas. And Rabbi Dosa is of the position that when a woman is held in captivity and comes out, she can eat truma. So, and meaning to say that she wasn't violated. So they both are, in other words, Rav Yochanan's proposition over here seems to be pretty straightforward. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Dosa are basically both of the position that a woman is not violated while held in captivity. So Amar Rav Adam Alohi, Rabbi says, look, it's not a compelling argument. Ad kan lokam Rabbi Yehuda hachayel shelo yechot niskar, ava hasim ki Rabbanan Tzvirlei. Look, here's how we could separate the two cases. In the case of a man being ma'anis, a woman who was previously held captive. So here's what we're going to say. Was she violated? Maybe, maybe not. Meaning, it could be that maybe she was violated. However, there is a chance that she wasn't violated. And now what? You're going to let the ma'anis get away? In other words, he's obviously a chote, he's a sinner. And now, on the chance that maybe she wasn't, on the chance that maybe she was violated, you're going to exempt the ma'anis from paying a knas? We don't want that. We don't want the sinner to profit. Shelo ye chote niskar. But over here, in terms of eating truma, maybe he would agree. Maybe he would agree with the Chachamim, not Rabbi Dosa, that a woman who was held captive is going to simply no longer have the ability to eat truma. Inami, we can counter in the other direction as well. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Dosa asam ela b'truma d'rabanan. Ava knas d'raisa k'rabanan sfirle. Also, alternatively, we could say that when it comes to truma, so maybe by truma, we're talking about truma d'rabanan, we're not talking about truma min haTorah. And there's room to be mako. When we're talking about a kanas, which is daraisa, I don't know, maybe Rabbi Dosa holds like the Chachamim, that if the kanas is a din daraisa, and there's a chance that she doesn't have basulim, so maybe a kanas won't be imposed. So all Rabbi's doing is saying is that, look, Rav Yochanan's proposal may be correct, but it may not be correct. It's not compelling. So the Gemara says, so let me hear this well. Meaning, the Abaye says to Rabbah, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're asserting that the whole reason that a man is ma'anis a woman who was historically held captive, the reason why he has to pay knas is based on the principle of shelo yechot niskar. V'hatanya, how about this? I'm going to show you a braisa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shvuya, shenishbeis harei hi b'kdusha sa, afilo ba'as esar shanim k'siva samasayim. A woman who was held captive and released from captivity. So Rav Yehuda says, even at 10 years of age, she can command a ksuva of 200 zuz, meaning she's a basula. So v'hasa ma'ishalo yichot eniskarika. Now, when it comes to what her ksuva is going to cost, is there a sinner over here? No. In other words, she's going to get married, and all we're saying is that we assume that she is a basula, so that her ksuva is going to be 200. But there's no chot eniskar, there's no sinner over here. So the Gemara says, hasam nami. The Gemara says, you're right. There's no sinner per se, but we're going to use a similar argument. It's not the same argument, but it's similar. Look, she comes out of captivity. And if, let's say, for example, we were to take her ksuva and say, look, anyone wants to marry her, her ksuva is going to be 100. So now, people are going to look at her and people are going to say, oh, 100? Oh, in other words, she, right, that is a tell, that's a really strong indicator that she was in fact violated. Okay, so there will be some really good people out there in the world who are going to ready to take on such a woman, but most people will not. And so if we go ahead and downgrade her ksufa from being 200 to 100, no one's going to want to marry her, or in other words, she'll have a much harder time trying to find someone. And so therefore, that's another sensitivity, that's another consideration why it is that Rabbi Yehuda would say that her ksufa should remain at 200. V'savar Rabbi Yehuda b'kdushas l'kaima v'atanya. So the Gemara now is going to push forward, meaning we have Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah and in a Braisa, and really two Braisas. We have Rabbi Yehuda saying that a woman held captivity is assumed to be in a state of Tahara, Kedusha and Tahara. So the Gemara says, is that really true? We learned in the following Braisa. So a person who ransoms a woman who was held captive is allowed to marry her, but if he testifies about her, that she was in fact not violated, so you cannot marry her. And Rabbi Yehuda says, under no circumstance can you marry her. So obviously over here we're describing a kohen. So hagufakasha. Now before we even ask the question, we need to clean up the brisa. Amarta podes hashvoi yisaino v'hadatana. So the first part of the brisa is that if you ransom her, you can marry her. And then the brisa goes on to say, meid ba'lo yisaino. But if you testify about her, you can't marry her. Mishim de meid ba'lo yisaino. The Gemara says, I don't understand. You testified about a woman, and that now is going to prohibit you from marrying her? That doesn't make sense. So halakasha hachikamar. So the Gemara says, no, let's understand this a little bit better. We're just cleaning up the brisa, and then we're going to reset and ask the question. Hapodes hashvoi made by yisaena, made by kedi lo yisaena. Now, if you ransom her and testify about her, so then you can marry her. In other words, the fact that you're putting up so much money to marry her, that basically indicates, that is a strong indicator that you are confident that she was not violated. And you're putting your money behind your behind this. You're paying the ransom to release her. But if all you're doing is just testifying about her, meaning but you're not putting any money down, so you're not allowed to marry her. And the and it could just simply be, I mean, the Gemara is going to say this, that the only reason why you're testifying about her is not because you really believe what you're saying, but because you were taken by her. But in other words, you're not really putting in, you're not putting money down at all, and there's no real backing to that which you're saying. Of course, you know, people do in fact like to be honest and truthful, and generally speaking, no one's going to testify falsely. But the counter consideration over here is that you were love struck. So the Gemara says, "Mikama kam kasha le Rabbi Yehuda." Okay, so now we have a better understanding of the Braisa, but obviously now the difficulties with Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, and under no circumstances can you marry her. This is the same Rabbi Yehuda who we've been hearing since the beginning of Shir today, who says that a woman who is held as a shvuya is in fact in the state of Kedusha. So the Gemara says, Amar Rapapa, Ema Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Kachu, Ven Kach Yisaena. Okay, so Rapapa says, look, the question is really strong, and really the only solution is editing. We're going to have to edit the Braisa. And Rabbi Yehuda and the Braisa says, Ven Kachu, Ven Kach Yisaena. Okay, so that's what we're going to have to do. And Ravuna Braid, Rav Yeshua Amar Lolam Kidiktani. And a second proposal of the Gemara is, let's not edit the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Ledivrem de Rabbanan Kamar Lehu. But Rabbi Yehuda is not espousing his own viewpoint, but rather he is arguing based on the viewpoint of the Chachamim. Lididi ben kachu ben kach yisaena. Look, Rabbi Yehuda says, you want my opinion? And I'm sure in the base measures they have heard his opinion before. You want my opinion? My opinion is that she's in a state of Kedusha. And you can marry her. But ela lididchu ben kachu ben kach. Lo yisaena mi ba'ilei, but to you the chachamim, I can't possibly understand. You assume that a captive is taken advantage of. She's violated. Okay, I understand that that's your position. So that should always be your position. Why aren't you always consistent? V'rabanan, and the chachamim's counter argument is apodes hashvuya made by yisaena lo shadi inishu zebichti, made by kedi lo yisaena shemayin av nasamba. The counter argument of the chachamim is: look, if you're going to pay for her ransom, so that is now a really good indication that she, in fact, was not violated. You firmly believe, but it's more than just a belief. Meaning you think you know, you believe you know, that she is, in fact, been in a state of Kedusha. Your money is backing up your claim. But if all you're doing is just simply testifying, shamayin of nasam bam. In other words, you could have, it could be that you were just simply love struck, and you know that you don't know that she was pristine, but in other words, but you were taken by her, and therefore you're just simply saying it. Lamed vav amud beis, the last line. So the Gemara, according to Rav Yochanan, Rav Yehuda is of the position that a woman, when held captive, is b'kedusha sa. She's in a state of kedusha. The shita of Rav Yehuda is again not the accepted viewpoint. The accepted viewpoint is that a shvui is assumed to have been violated. Now remember, because we've discussed this a lot in Ksuvos, a little bit back in Yevamos as well, there are a number of kulas that are given to the shvuya, so that if there is even not the what normally is acceptable edus, meaning you need two kosher edim normally in order to establish a status. Over here by a shvuya, you don't need two edim, you can even one ed. There are certain kulas that are given by a shvuya, but the default is that if a woman's held captive, so unfortunately she will be taken advantage of, she will be violated, and again, lamay nafkamina, she can't marry a kohen when she comes out of her shvuya. And on that, Rav Yehuda is cholik. He disagrees. He simply is of the position that a shvuya is in a state of kedusha. Ramila, Rav Papa, Bar Shmuel, Rav Yosef. So now more challenges. We are on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Vesav Rav Yehuda b'kedusha zakayma v'atanya. Let's consider the following brisa. Hagiyoshin is gari v'rasadam. So let's say a woman's converting, and immediately after conversion, she sees menstrual blood. Now, Tosus is very bothered. It's going to be, and the Gemara is basically going to say this in just a moment. Meaning, we're asking on Rav Yehuda, who's discussing a shvuya. Currently, right now, we're learning a brisa regarding a giores. Okay. They're obviously not the same. And so it is a little bit difficult to even begin to understand how this was even presented as a challenge. Okay. And there are definitely approaches, and you can see the top Tosos, who tries to give an approach to this. I'm just giving away right now, because if you didn't see that shift where we were talking about a shvuya, now the brisa on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph is talking about a giores, it's obviously not the same. And the Gemara is going to note that. But at least for the time being, we're going to treat it as if they're the same. V'sav Rav Yehuda b'kedushas ha-kayma v'atanya giyoreshin izgari v'ras adam. Rabbi Yehuda amar da yishaita. Rabbi Yossi amar ari kechol anashim ha-matame me'esayisim ha-bekida le-bekida. So, the first machlokus between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim is, does she go back retroactively 24 hours? The first Mishnah in Nida, machlokus between Shammai and Hillel. And then, who do we passing like? Neither. We passing like the Chachamim of that is Tumas Meisleis. I'm not going to go through the entire discussion right now. Suffice to say for now, that when a woman is a Nida, she is Tumea, she has Tumas Nida going forward, and not retroactively. However, the din de rabbanan, there is tuma. It's what's called tuma me'es leis, 24 hours retroactively. Let's say that a woman converts and she sees now the blood that came out before her conversion obviously has no tuma whatsoever. It's menstrual blood, but it's not metame because she's not Jewish. But once she converts, then the menstrual bleeding is going to result in tuma. And let's say she converted, let's say 5 hours ago, 6 hours ago, and then she has menstrual blood. So then, she is not going to go back 24 hours. At least that's the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yossi disagrees. No, she's going to go back. Now, the Rashi over here, and again, I don't want to get too involved, but it's a really interesting Rashi, and I strongly suggest you go through it after, or even now. But Rashi over here goes on to say that even though it's meisleis umi pikida lepikida, so once there is no longer meisleis, there's no longer pikida lepikida. If you understood that, great. If not, you could. I'm going to say this, but I don't really mean this. You could see me afterwards. Whatever. For those listening at home, I'm not physically in the room today. I'm virtual today. Anyway, so that's machlokas number one. Machlokas number two. Tzrich lamtin gimel chadashim de Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi matil aris lenasa miyad. Then does she have to wait 3 months in order to establish paternity? Also machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi. So what comes out over here is that we have our GRS, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, we do not assume that she maintained her virginity, meaning that while she was a non-Jew, she was with men. So what the Gemara is just for a moment assuming is that if that's true for Giyaris, it's also true for Shvuya as well. To which the Gemara points out the obvious difference. Amar le Giyaris Shvuya Karamis. So Giyaris Lamintor Nafsha Shvuya Mintor Nafsha. How could you compare the two? When it comes to Shvuya, she is Jewish. She's taken into captivity. She's in a horrific situation, and she's going to try her best to remain in a state of purity. On the other hand, when it comes to a woman who converts, so before her conversion, she's a nachriya, and maybe she's not as committed to keeping her purity. In other words, the distinction's so obvious. So v'rami shvuya shvuya, the Gemara says, okay, but consider now the following brisa. D'tanya gyoros v'ashvuya v'ashivcha, sheniftu v'shenizgar v'shenishtachu yiseros al benos, so any of these women who either went through a conversion or taken out of captivity or a shivcha that was freed, so they must wait 3 months for establishing paternity. So over here we have a brisa. This brisa is incorporating shvuya as well. So Rav Yosef hears this. Rav Yosef now is left silent. Because it's true now. We have a brisa that says that according to Rav Yehuda, a woman who's taken into captivity is in fact assumed to have had relations with her captors. That's why when she comes out, she has to wait for 3 months in order to establish paternity. Anyway, you're telling me that according to Rav Yehuda, Shvuya is assumed to be in a state of pristine? Meanwhile, the brisa we just quoted, it's really difficult. So in fact, it was so difficult, Rav Yosef didn't know what to answer. Amrle mi deshmiya lach beha. So he says to Rav Papa, Rav Yosef says to Rav Papa, "No, did you hear anything about this?" So Amalei, Rav Papa says, "Yeah." Bryce is talking about where they actually saw them having relations, meaning that it's not that we don't know what happened. We know what happened. In fact, we know what happened in this particular case. The Bryce is dealing with a specific case in which they know that she was with her captors. The obvious question, which is now, what? Rabbi Yossi says she doesn't have to wait to establish paternity. Why not? If it's the case is Ra'u Shenivala, of course she needs to wait 3 months in order to establish paternity. She can very well have been impregnated by the captor. So Amara, because of Rabbi Yossi, Isha Mizana Mishtamish es Bamoch Shalot Esaber. So the Gemara, so Rabbi Yossi is of the position that she'll use contraception. So Bishal Megiyaris, so Kevin the Dite Aligar and Minter and Afshad, the Gemara says, look, there certainly are, you can plan for it if you could become a gear. In other words, a woman is going to become a gearist, so she knows she's going to become a gearist, and so if she decides before converting to have relations, so she could use contraception and mentor and nafsha. I'm sorry, came into dieta ligure and mentor and nafsha. So shvuyanami, the lo yada hechem mematula, and the as far as the shvuy is concerned, a woman who's held captivity. So at that point in time, she was also going to use contraception. Shivcha nami deshama mi pi mara, and shivcha as well. In other words, she also will be using contraception. Maybe she's overhearing how she's going to be freed, and right, she overhears the conversation, and now that she knows that her freedom is impending, so she will use contraception. But Ella Yotze b'shem ba'ayin Michael Amemar. But there are cases where it's going to happen. All of a sudden, spontaneously, a woman's going to be freed. So, for example, let's say she's a shivcha kananis, and she got and her tooth got knocked out, her eye got knocked out, any one of her extremities gets knocked out. So the halacha is that she's yotze l'cheirus, and that happens with no warning. And so, what are you going to say that she was planning? She wasn't planning. And if she's not planning, so then the expectation is she's not going to use contraception. So maybe Rav Yossi will tell you that, look, in that case over there, we will have to wait 3 months in order to establish paternity. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, okay, but I'm telling you right now that when it comes to a woman who was either raped or seduced, meanwhile, in the case of Ones, a woman has to wait 3 months in order to establish paternity. And Rav Yossi says she doesn't have to wait. And now, again, how does that work? I mean, according to Rav Yossi, she doesn't have to wait. In other words, it could very well be that she was impregnated by her, by the rapist. So Elamir Rabba Kasav Rav Yosi Yishem Ezana Misapachas Kedei Shelo Tisaber. So the Gemara says, okay, but what a woman can do, she can turn over in order make sure she doesn't get pregnant. Meaning, even without contraception, there is a way of avoiding pregnancy. Now, you don't need me to tell you this, but right, don't try this at home. Meaning that the Gemara's methodology of avoiding pregnancy obviously was effective in their time, right? Not as effective in these times. What happened between them and now? So I'll let other people who know, who understand this much better than I do, I'll let other people attempt to explain it. But anyway, from the Gemara's viewpoint, we could just explain the Gemara really simple. From the Gemara's viewpoint, so this is a way to avoid pregnancy. And so therefore, according to Rav Yossi, even in the case of Onis, even in the case of Mefata, so what the woman can do is that she can use this maneuver in order to avoid pregnancy. And then what Rav Yehuda will counter, V'idach, Cheshin, Hashem Elo Nehafcha, Yafa Yafa. Yeah, and Rav Yehuda will just simply say, I'm not so convinced that this is a that this is going to be a successful method of avoiding pregnancy. Okay. There is a really interesting Rashi over here. I'm going to highlight it and certainly underline it. Rashi over here, Mis HaPeches, right? The last Rashi on our discussion. Shiyatza HaZera V'lo Yiklot. So again, she's going to turn over and the Zera will not collect. V'ha Afila B'midah D'Mimela Matzila Me'aved. And even if it happens all of a sudden, it was totally unplanned and unexpected, but still there's a way to avoid pregnancy. And V'chulan Osos Kane. And Rashi says, and everyone does this. Now, when Rashi says V'chulan Osos Kane, seemingly what Rashi is saying is that we're not just answering the case of Onis and Mefata, but presumably we go up the list, meaning go over all the cases that we discussed above in the Gemara, including the Shifcha Kananis, who's Yotze B'Shein Ba'ayin, meaning Rashi seems to be saying that any and all women can use this kind of methodology of family planning in order to avoid pregnancy. And Rashi seems to be saying that this Gemara's answer is relitigating all of the above. Okay? Whether or not Rashi means that, so that's a discussion amongst the Rishonim. We're going to go on, but it's certainly a Rashi to highlight. Shenemar v'lo yason anoshe enesh. And now, here we go. The Gemara that we're going to be doing now, really the second half of today's daf, finishing up the Gemara for today, is going to be giving us the basics regarding Kimlei b'derabimine. So what do we have? We have a pasuk in Mishpatim that we already went over earlier this morning that teaches us Kimlei b'derabimine. Im lo yason anoshe enesh. If she wasn't killed, so then financial penalty. But if she was killed, no financial penalty. Otherwise stated, Kimlei b'derabimine. The Hamach anafka me'asa anafka. The Gemara says, good, I also have another pasuk of Kedei Rishasa. And so here, V'haya im bin hakos harasha. This is Dvarim Perek Chaf Hei. V'haya im bin hakos harasha. V'hi pilu hashofe v'hi kalafanav kedei rishaso b'mispar. And kedei rishaso, based on his wicked behavior, so he's going to get malchus. Okay, the pasuk over here, it's the pasuk associated with Adam Zomimim anyway, but the pasuk over here describes malchus is going to be inflicted on somebody who is subject to malchus. And the drasha is Mishum Rishachas Atamechayva Viatamechayva Shtei Rishayos. And the basin only has the ability to give one punishment, not multiple punishments. What we have over here are two sources that teaches us the same idea. So Chad Bemisa Mamon v'Chad Bemalkos Mamon. And so what the Gemara says, I need two sources. Why? One for Misa Mamon, one for Malkos Mamon. Sricha. They're both necessary. Di Yashmin Misa Mamon Mishem Diika Ibn Neshama v'Malkos Mamon. Like Ibn Neshama Imelo. Because if I only had one drasha, I would have said Misa Mamon. Yes, but not Malkos Mamon. Malkos Mamon. Why not give two punishments? Meaning, no one's going to die over here. In other words, they'll just simply get lashes and he'll have to pay as well. V'yashmina makos mamon mishum delochami yisura. Ava miso mamon dechami yisura imalo tricha. We can also go in the other direction. Meaning, if I only had a drasha for makos mamon, I would have said, yeah, makos mamon, only give one of the two. But misa mamon, we have to give both. Why? The argument would be that misa, obviously, is representing a significant isra in the Torah, and maybe both have to be imposed. Or Ula Rabbi Meir, fine. So what do we have right now? Two sources that teaches us that you only give one punishment, and the two sources of Lo Yason Anoshe Anesh, the second source of Risha Achas Ata Mechaiva V'Ata Mechaiva Shtei Rishayos, and one is for Misan Mamon, the other is for Malkos and Mamon. The Gemara says, what about Shitas Reb Meir? So hopefully remember, because we have done Reb Meir now multiple times here in this perek, Reb Meir says, Malkus and Mammon can in fact coexist. If a person is subject to both, he is of the position, obviously he is against the Chachamim, he is of the opinion that you in fact, Beis Din, will impose both penalties. So now for Rabbi Meir, we're a little bit stuck. Meaning he does agree to Kimle B'derab Mimine when it's Misa and Mammon, but not Malkus and Mammon. So for Rabbi Meir, how many drushas do I need now? I only need one drusha, not two. Okay, that's called a problem. Uli Rabbi Meir Dama Loka Mishalim Tarti Lama Lisa, why do I need two drushas? Chada b'Misa Mammon, chada b'Misa Malkus. So one's by Misa Mammon, the other one's by Misa Malkus, as we are now on the top of Lamed Zayin Amid Beis. So Utsricha. And as the Gemara is now going to argue, I need a drasha for Misa and Mammon, Kimle B'derab Mine, Misa and Malkus, Kimle B'derab Mine. Diyash Mina Misa Mammon Misham Dechad Begufe Vechad B'Mammon Elo Abdinan Avab Misa Malkus Di'ida V'ida Begufe Ema Misa Richta Hiven Avid Bein. So look, if I only had one drasha, I would have said, good, Misa and Mammon, one is for the body and the other one is for his money. Two different categories, two different departments. But if it's Misa and Malkus, you know what? Why not just do both? Because Misa and Malkus are both going on his body. And you know what Malkus is? It's like a Misa Richta, right? I know recently I've been highlighting that Rashi in Sanhedrin and on Daf Yud, right? Please see that Rashi in Sanhedrin, Yud Amid Aleph, where Rashi describes Malkus as being a form of Misa, right? Rashi says it in very, very striking terms. Anyway, so over here we could have said that. We could have made that argument. If I only had a drasha for Misa Malkus, we're not gonna repeat the same act with his body. But when it comes to Misa and Mammon, one's his body, the other one's pocket, maybe those are two different areas. And maybe we would impose both for both areas. So therefore, I need a drasha for both. This is again, according to Reb Meir, I need one drasha for Misa and Mammon, I need a second drasha for Misa and Malkus. Okay. What we're going to be doing now for the rest of today's daf, because that really ends the discussion, Kimle B'derab Mine, we have a number of other psukim that also give an indication of don't do multiple punishments. But we've already established Kimle B'derab Mine, so what we'll be doing for the rest of today's daf is explaining these other drashas, notably. V'losichu kofel nefesh rotzeach, lama li. So the pasuk over here is in the 35th parak of Bamidbar. Lo sichu kofel anus el ir miklatol shuv l'sheves baretz ad mosa kohen. Sorry, let me back up one pasuk earlier. Lo sichu kofel nefesh rotzeach asher hu rosh lamos ki mos yumatz. You have a murderer, and he says to the court, "Look, let's assume I'm guilty. How about I just give a lot of money to the family, and I not get executed?" So to that, the Torah says, we do not take kofar. So and the Gemara says, okay, now, seemingly over here, unnecessary. Because, look at the top Rashi, mashma, nami, imtar, gena, lo tanshan, amamon. In other words, the implication over here is that once you execute him, you don't take money from him, which basically is what we know already and have established numerous times. The Amar Achmana lo shishka mamon mine v'tiftar mikatala. So I gave away the Gemara's answer, meaning what I didn't properly do is I didn't explain the Havamina from the onset. I already gave away the Gemara's answer. Anyway, the Gemara's answer is what I said previously, and that is that the pasuk's not there to teach me about Kimle. The pasuk's coming to tell me that he can't extricate himself from the death penalty by paying his way out. So velosi chukofalanus al ir meklato lamali. The next pasuk, which I already cited regarding galus, Amar Achman lo sishkol mamon mine v'tifter min galus. A person can't pay his way out of galus. Meaning, if a person kills somebody b'shogeg, see the second parak of Makos in its entirety for what exactly is ritzicha b'shogeg. Meaning, what are the parameters? But it's basically what we would call in this country. I'm not giving a strict legal definition. I'm just helping. I'm facilitating understanding. It's basically manslaughter. You killed somebody, but not with intent to kill, but you were negligent. Okay, that is a oversimplification. See the second paragraph for much more detail. Anyway, so and you can't pay your way out. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rechmana lo sishkol mamon, mine v'tifter min galus v'trei kray lamali." Okay, no. A pasuk that tells me that you can't pay your way out of being executed, you can't pay your way out of galus. Why do I need both pesukim? Chad b'shogeg, chad b'mezed u'tzricha. Diash mina mezed mishum de chamir yisurah v'shogeg lo chamir yisurah yimalah. And again, the havamina. The havamina would be that when it comes to mezed, okay, that is a significant isser. You killed somebody intentionally. You can't pay your way out. But shogeg, you weren't intentional. Maybe you could pay your way out. The isser is not as chamor. So v'iyash mina shogeg mishum deleki b'neshama. And now we're just simply going to argue in the other direction. Look, if we're talking about shogeg, you can't pay your way out. Aval mezed dika b'neshama. But if you don't pay your way out when it comes to mezed, so you're going to die. Like Rashi's language, we're going to be losing a nefesh b'Yisrael. So maybe the argument should be, pay your way out so that we don't have to have another person dying. And as we pointed out numerous times, a person that's difficult to have sympathy for, meaning he's a murderer who intended to murder somebody else. But still, executing him would be losing another life. So the havamina would have been that maybe allow him to pay his way out. So emalo, so that's why I need the second pasuk as well. We seem to have another pasuk that speaks to the same idea over here. This is Parsha Shoftim. This is by Egla Rufa. So why do I need that pasuk? Me by lelicha detanya to teach me the following. Minayin shem nis arpa egla va'archa kach nimsa ha'arig minayin shem potrin oso shenem alarz lo yichaper l'adam asher shufach ba. So let's say we go through the whole ceremony of egla rufa, right? The corpse was found between two cities. We'll measure to find out which one's more proximate. The city that's more proximate now is going to take on the responsibility, go through the mitzvah of egla rufa. And you go through the whole process of egla rufa, and after having done all that, we found the murderer. Okay, so again, the havamina would be, well, we already went through the kapara of egla rufa, we're not going to put the murderer to death, right? Wrong. We are going to put the murderer to death. So, I'm sorry, what just happened? I lost my spot. I'm back. So, again, this pasuk seems to be relating the same idea again. So the Gemara says, no, me by lelechid detanya. I need that for another halacha, and that is minayin lamumsim besayif shuhumin etzavar. So someone is subject to the execution of sayif. Okay, four different ways that Beis Din executes based on the avera. The Gemara in Sanhedrin goes through every avera that is subject to the capital punishment and which capital punishment is going to be imposed. Right now, what we are learning together is how to do sayif. Sayif is loosely translated decapitation, but what does that mean? So Tom Lamar Vata Tevera Damana Kibin Kerbecha. Hukshu Kol Shof Chidamim Le'Egla Rufa. Ma'ala Halam Nefsafer Av Shof Chidamim Nefsafer. So we're going to take a pasuk by Egla Rufa to teach us how to execute via Sayef. Ima Lalam Bekofetz Mimul Aref Afkan Bekofetz Mimul Aref. Interesting. So did you know that by the Egla Rufa you take a hatchet and you lop off the neck of the animal from the back of the neck? Maybe that's what we're going to do in terms of decapitation, like the French. So I'm Rav Nachman, I'm a Rav Baravu, I'm a Krav. After Recha Kamocha Barulo Misa Yafe. So the Gemara says no. That in when choosing how a person is going to be executed, so take into consideration. After Recha Kamocha, and we made this comment numerous times before, but I don't mind. Let's say it again, and that is the Gemara's application of After Recha Kamocha is as morbid as one can imagine. Right, the Gemara almost never says after Recha Kamocha. You know what that tells you? Be nice to other people, right? Treat people with the same consideration that you yourself want to be treated. Yes, the Gemara and Shabbos, but generally speaking, when you see after Recha come up in the Gemara, it comes up in this kind of context. You know, when you execute somebody, so be considerate about how to execute him. After Recha Kamocha, hatcheting him in the back of the neck. Right, I know we're talking about execution, but that's inhumane. No one's going to want that. But slitting his throat from the front, that's more humane. V'after l'recha kamocha. There is a fascinating Tosfos in Sanhedrin that speaks more to this idea of why the Gemara applies v'after l'recha kamocha to only these kinds of morbid scenarios. Mem he, I think, is where Tosfos can be found in Sanhedrin. See Tosfos over there. Anyway. So another pasuk that speaks more or less to the same idea, but I'll tell you what, that's not a great stopping point, but we're going to stop here, because the truth of the matter is that this is going to continue well into tomorrow's daf, and basically take us to the Mishnah tomorrow. So we'll pause over here and we'll pick it up tomorrow. Just a quick sikkum, a quick summary of what we saw today. So number one, so we started with the Mishnah on Lamed Vav Amid Beis. The Mishnah talks about a shivuya and a shivcha and a giyaris. So if they are released, I know it's different releases for all three of them, but if they are released after 3 years of age, they're no longer assumed to be a basula. Therefore, a man's ma'anis, any one of these women, not going to have to pay kanas. Goes without saying, I've said this time and again, but it's okay, it's important information. Goes without saying that this does not make it okay. In fact, it is usur, absolutely usur, right? We've said this point many times. And on top of that, there's still many payments that you're going to have to pay. It's assault, it's chavala. You're going to have to pay all the nizke chavala, as detailed in Baba Kama, the 8th parak. It just happens to be that we're only referring to the kanas, because the kanas is for the rupturing of the basulim. She doesn't have a basula, therefore there's no kanas. That's the only thing that's going to be waived, but all the other payments and the yisurim that are involved are all going to be in play. Additional to that, the Mishnah teaches us that when a man has ma'anis a woman who is chayve misas based in, so then he doesn't have to pay because of kimle b'derabim mine. Okay. And from there, going forward, so what did we discuss? So first of all, we spent a good amount of time this morning from the Mishnah all the way to the middle of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, even towards the bottom of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, litigating the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that Shvuya remains in a state of Tahara. Now, he is a Shitas Yachid, but the Gemara spends a good amount of time litigating his position. That was part one of today's daf. And part two of today's daf, Kimle B'derabim Mine. What's the source of Kimle B'derabim Mine? So our Mishnah brings in one, Im Lo Yeh Asona Noshe Anesh. The Gemara brings in a second, Kidei Rishaso Atamechav Avi Atamechav Vishtei Rishayos. So we have two sources for Kimle B'derabim Mine. Today's daf, Laman Zion. Why two sources? The Gemara explains why two. According to Rabbi Meir, who says, Loke u'mishalem, why two sources? The Gemara explains why, according to Shitas Rabbi Meir, I need two sources. One's for Misa and Mammon. The other one is for Misa and Malkus. And finally, last thing that we covered is that there's a series of other psukim in the Torah that seem to be teaching us Kimle. And the Gemara says, not teaching us Kimle, but rather teaching us other halachas. What are the halachas that we went through on the Amud Beis? Number one, you can't pay your way out of being executed. You can't pay your way out of Galus. And finally, if the Egla Arufa process has been done, if the killer is found, he's still going to be put to death. And finally, the way that Saif is done is with a knife passed along the front of his neck. The Gemara says, and we learned it from the Egla Arufa, but not exactly from the Egla Arufa, based on Va'aftal Recha Kamocha. Adkan.